now to a check on the pandemic with a renowned epidemiologist who has followed every twist and turn. Something about Michael Osterholm that sets him apart from his peers. He's not afraid to say three words.
Probably the three most important words that I continue to say over and over again is, I don't know.
That is from his COVID podcast Thursday, his 104th episode. Join in with transmission questions, with masking, boosters, social distancing, you name it. 800-642-1234. Michael Osterholm is a professor and director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. Michael Osterholm, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Great to be with you again. Thank you.
Do you think epidemiologists, public health experts have been overly confident about COVID predictions? I mean, what do you know for certain?
Well, I think it's fair to say that this virus continues to throw 210-mile-an-hour curveballs at us, and it's really critical that we understand that so that we can anticipate the future. For example, it was a year ago right now when the country was in the sense of we're over, we're done with the pandemic. We are marching towards independence from COVID on 4th of July of last year. And of course, then we saw what the variants did, these new variants, Delta, and then along comes Omicron. Well, prior to that time, each one of the variants that we saw that emerged, these new, basically next edition of the viruses, starting right with Alpha and Beta and Gamma, all the Greek letters that we named them, through Delta up to Omicron, we had a variant and then we'd see a new variant. Well, now we've seen something very different. Omicron, since its arrival in November and December, has now given us a whole number of sub-variants, basically children of the children. And that has now resulted in a very different epidemiologic picture. I think right now it's fair to say, Kate, we have a very different kind of pandemic going on in much of the world today compared to what we had 6 to 12 months ago.
There are some people who just don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that the COVID is raging or circulating widely again here in our communities. They just want to go back to their lives, push this into the back of thoughts. What happens when we have this tendency?
Well, first of all, I think we all agree. We're all in that camp, okay? Mm-hmm, all of us want this to be over with. I think one of the important points to make right now is that we are actually in a better way with this virus than we were 6 months ago. And what I mean by that is that if you actually look at the number of cases, I think it's fair to say we have more transmission of this virus going on now than we have at any time since the pandemic began. The problem is that we're not counting cases like we once were because we don't have people getting tested with the PCR test, that highly effective and reliable test. Who are getting tested often are people with these home testing kits where results never get reported. I can say with absolute conviction, I know more people today and in the last 7 to 10 days who have become infected in my world than I've known at any 7 to 10 day time period since the pandemic began. Now, that's not good news. But what is good news is right now, deaths are at very low levels relative to where they've been. Instead of, talking about the thousands of deaths a day, we're now talking about 300 deaths a day, which is still a lot, when you think about 2,000 deaths a week. But it's a very different type of clinical picture. Hospitalizations have creeped up some, but they're not anywhere close to what they were during the original Delta and Omicron peak. So we're in this stage right now of where it's here, it's everywhere, but it's not nearly as bad as it was. And the question, which we all are asking, so what's next? What is next? And that's where I wish I could give you more clarity.
Where are you at with masking as you see it circulating so widely? Should people be wearing masks?
Well, first of all, let's take a step back because I've had this discussion on this program on multiple occasions in the past, and I'll just reiterate where I'm at. The fact of the matter is that this virus is highly, highly infectious. Think of yourself in a room with someone who's smoking a cigarette. If you can smell that smoke, then you are, in a sense, also experiencing what it would be like if someone were in that same room breathing air in and out but happened to be infected. Because that's what this virus is transmitted by, is aerosols, this kind of floating cloud of virus. And so you surely have to recognize that's happening right now. The challenge I think we have is that the public is over with this pandemic. They're done with it. Even though the virus isn't done with us, they're done with it. And so from the standpoint of any kind of respiratory protection, I think most people are saying, I'm not going to do it. Now, a couple caveats on that. Number one is that if you're going to use any kind of respiratory protection, make sure it's something that works. And that is, of course, this N95 respirator type mask we talk about. Not some cloth face covering, not a bandana, not a gaiter. They are not effective at all. You'll smell that smoke in that room if you were wearing one of those. So number one, it has to be a highly effective one. Number two is you have to wear it appropriately. And what I mean by that is we have continued to see month after month after month, about 25% of people, just as they were at the beginning of the pandemic, wearing it under their nose. Well, that is like shutting three of the five doors on your submarine before you take off underwater. You know, that's not going to do you any good. Mm-hmm. And so why even do it at all? And so I think those are important pieces. Now, who should wear it? Well, you know, at this point, as I just said, this is a much milder illness across the board that we're seeing. But it's not mild for everybody. We're still talking about 300 deaths a day. And in that case, if you're at increased risk for serious illness, even if you've had your four doses of vaccine, but you're older, you have diabetes, you're overweight, you have any number of these conditions that can predispose you to more serious illness, then you're the person that surely needs to be very mindful of, if I am going to be in public, I need to protect myself because the public's not going to protect me. And so I personally, because I'm an older white male, and I wear my N95 respirator and I'm in public places right now just by the very nature of how much transmission is going on out there.
If other people aren't wearing theirs, does it make that much of a difference whether you wear yours?
It makes every bit of difference.
Okay.
Because of the fact that you are protecting yourself and you are doing everything you can. If you've been vaccinated and then you basically wear an N95 respirator. So yes, I would tell you absolutely still do it. And you can still afford yourself a lot of protection. Remember, in healthcare facilities where people wear N95 respirators, they can protect themselves dramatically from the patient population who might be infected. Well, you can do the same thing in the public.
Veteran epidemiologist Michael Osterholm, fielding your questions about masking, about boosters, about a COVID surge and circulation, questions on the summer, insights he has on what the coming seasons could entail. Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Michael Osterholm here on the Ideas Network. We are taking stock of where things are at in the pandemic with veteran epidemiologist, getting at your COVID transmission questions here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, University of Minnesota epidemiologist Michael Osterholm with us, fielding questions about new variants, about boosters for kids, masking, the grim milestone of 1 million deaths in our country, how that hits home. Conversation is right here, 800-642-1234 to join in. Michael Osterholm directs the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy with us for 10 more minutes. Let's look at our kids for a moment. The school year nearing an end. Masking policies have varied widely in schools across Wisconsin and I'm sure across Minnesota as well. What is your recommendation for K-12 schools as they look ahead?
Well, first of all, I'm convinced that we will be still living in a world of COVID come fall. And so we do need to anticipate this issue right now. The question is going to be, though, just what will that illness look like? And as I've just described over the course of our previous interview here, we're seeing a milder illness right now. But when we look at kids, we've had over 450 kids, younger kids, die from COVID over the course of the pandemic, many of them associated more recently with the Omicron surge. So this is not just a benign disease in kids. It more often is milder, but it's not always. And so I think that we still have to really focus on, number one, getting kids vaccinated. You're going to be hearing more and more over the course of the next several weeks about what I believe will be the imminent approval of the vaccine for those down to infants, basically under 5 years of age. But the problem is, right now, if you look at kids 5 to 11, actually, only 29% of those kids who have been eligible to get vaccines since November have been vaccinated. So one is we've got to continue to push there. The vaccine can surely reduce even more so the potential for serious risk of illness in these kids. The second thing is school districts need to continue to look at their air quality in their buildings. I know this is not a short-term fix. Many of these buildings would take substantial refit and renovation to improve air, but that by itself can also be a major way to reduce the risk of transmission, not just of COVID, but of all the respiratory pathogens, including influenza. And then third, I think the whole issue on masking, and what do we do about that? And it is very fair to say that masking is not ideal, particularly in younger kids. None of us want to do that. But if you're going to try to reduce the transmission, you've got to wear an adequate protection mask. And what I mean by that is something like a KN95 for kids, as opposed to just a face cloth covering. And that surely can help also reduce the risk of transmission of the virus in the school setting.
We just got word of the boosters for 5 to 11-year-old, that recommendation. There's also that second booster potential for over 50 or immunocompromised. Where are you at with boosters?
Oh, I think boosters are very important right now. You know, these vaccines have been remarkable, but they're not perfect. And what we've learned over the course of the past 18 months is that the vaccines which give you this initial big boost of protection, and in fact, during that early days of having just received the vaccine, you're really protected against even infection itself. But as time goes on, that protection wears off, and you need to basically get the booster to then boost it back up again. And while 4 to 6 weeks after you've been vaccinated, you start to see an increase again in people who are just getting infected, meaning that they have any illness. But then when you get further out than that, then you start seeing the protection slipping for serious illness, hospitalizations, and deaths. The boosters can raise that back up again. Now, the challenge we have is we can't boost our way out of this pandemic. You know, when I look at those who have received two doses of vaccine, these adults, they obviously are not vaccine hesitant or vaccine hostile. And yet, only about 35% of these individuals have gone on and gotten a third dose, when we've made it clear how important that third dose can be in protecting you against that hospitalization. So we've got some real work to do in terms of helping the public understand the importance of these vaccinations, how many doses you need, and what will we do over the future? Because as I said, I don't have any a belief that we're going to continue to boost our way out of this. People will just not continue to get vaccinated, and this is going to be a challenge.
Talking with Michael Osterholm, professor, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Michael, especially early in the pandemic, social distancing was such a buzz, making sure you kept that distance between other people. And we see now remnants as we go into different places of the signs reminding people to stay away from others. Where is the science and public health at with social distancing?
Well, you know, distance is your friend, as is time. So if you have a short amount of time in an environment and you're distant from anyone who might be infected, then, of course, that helps protect you. The problem is that we've now realized how infectious this virus really is, particularly the Omicron variants and subvariants. If you look right now at what we call BA2.1 or BA4, BA5, we've seen many super spreading events where, you know, 38 out of 42 people in a room, you know, or in an environment get infected just from one person. This is kind of what's happened at the White House Correspondents' Dinner and the gridirons, all these things that we've heard about. And so you can't just guarantee yourself, I'm going to be protected if I'm at least 6 feet away from somebody. That's just not true. In a fair way to look at this anymore. And so it is a function of time and number of people there. People, one, is just the chance of someone being infected in a room, if you have 100 people, is a lot higher than if you have only 5 people. Also, the amount of time you spend there and how much they're breathing out. Remember, keep coming back to that smoking analogy. Mm-hmm. If one person in the room is smoking, what's the chance of me inhaling that? But if 5 are smoking, what's the chance of me inhaling smoke then? And so it is going to be a situation with indoor air where you're at higher risk. but you've got to live your life. For those people who are at high risk of having serious illness, that's where, again, respiratory protection on top of vaccination plays such a key role in anything they do in that kind of public setting.
So here we are. More than a million people have died of COVID in our country. I know you've been recognizing this grim milestone. How well positioned are we for the next pandemic?
Well, I think for the next pandemic, which I at this point can only imagine it happening, I'm still stuck in the middle of this one that we're in right now. But I worry a lot, Kate, about where we're at as a society. I think that there is less trust now for public health than any time in my 47-year career. And trust is a very important element of making recommendations to protect people's lives, to save, you know, loved ones. If they don't believe you, they find that what you're talking about is not true, or I'm just done listening to you. And I think right now, public health is really in a bad way. There are a lot of people out there that said, I don't care what you tell me, I'm going to do X, Y, or Z because that's what I'm going to do. And so I think that that element of the preparedness for the next pandemic is really a challenge. I also worry about, as a country, will we make the commitment to be prepared for future pandemics just like other countries? Here we are right now watching Congress refusing to appropriate, you know, $20 billion after spending all the money they have as we're beginning to run short on vaccines and drugs for treating people who have COVID. That surely doesn't seem to be a sign that we're getting better prepared for the next pandemic. So I think, you know, we can't lose the lessons that we've learned from this one, and that this is about not just making life safer and better for people, but even economically making it more stable.
Michael, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your work.
Thank you. And Kate, thank you for the coverage you've given this topic. You have been a very faithful journalist to the message, to the information over the course of time. And for those of us, even outside of Wisconsin, we very much appreciate what you've done in terms of getting good information out.
Appreciate those words. Michael Osterholm, professor, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. Just ahead, we look at the latest approach to address the youth mental health crisis with a panel of experts. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.